Welcome to Feminists Without Mystique, a podcast where we process politics, sex, and the unrelenting firehose of bullshit in the news through an unapologetically feminist lens. Each week, we vent about the news, go deep on one important issue, call out terrible things happening below the top headlines in a segment called We See You, and then we'll end with something hopeful. And just a reminder to follow us on Instagram and the Twitter and on the Facebook and DM us or email us if you want to or have things to say. Yeah. Rate and review. Do all the internet things.
Yeah. If you find us on Apple Podcasts, rating and reviewing us is a great way for other people to find us and for us to get seen by, you know, people who might be interested in feminist topics or news or politics.
Yeah, all the fun stuff. And today we're going to talk about sexy sex. Millennial sexy sex. But first, we're going to talk about Bill Gates. Pretty much sums it up. I want to preface it with, like, I very much respect Bill Gates and think he's done, and know he's done, like, amazing things for the world. But we're all flawed and can make mistakes. And we must criticize those mistakes. We must.
But, you know, we also must, because we're living in an era where we're all controlled in one way or another by the billionaire class. Mm-hmm. I think we have some We See You's this week that touch on that. But the more that you kind of scratch the surface of where the money is flowing to and from, it's a pretty serious issue that only a few people can control, have such a huge say in policy and where the money flows to and from, even people who have huge charitable foundations. It's still kind of a monopoly on, like, they get to decide where and when they give their money.
And his comments in particular were, he said that when he was asked about Elizabeth Warren's wealth tax proposal and what it might cost him personally, he said, "I've paid more than $10 billion in taxes. I've paid more than anyone in taxes, but I'm glad to have, if I had to have paid $20 billion, it's fine. But when you say I should pay $100 billion, okay, then I'm starting to do a little math about what I have left over. Sorry, I'm just kidding." And then he also said that he doesn't think Elizabeth Warren is open-minded enough to sit down and talk to him. First on the money bit, like, one, he's worth like $106 billion, so he'd still have $6 billion even if that were the case, which is more than anyone needs for their life. But under her, there's actually a little tool on her website where you can calculate, and his actual annual tax would be like around $6 billion. So over time, maybe $100 billion, depending on how long he lives. But, you know, you don't need to have billion. I don't think we should have billionaires at all.
Yeah. That and when you think about it, it really doesn't, that does not seem super radical, actually. It doesn't remove the incentive-based system of capitalism to say that you could make literally hundreds of millions of dollars, but when you reach a certain point, the money could be doing so much good for other people, and just because you've made $1 billion doesn't necessarily mean that you deserve to have $1 billion, while other people making a lot less deserve to have a lot less. Like, there's been a lot of things that have gone your way. And at a certain point, the money needs to go to social programs because we can all do a lot better.
Instead of, like, passing down your shitty kids, which is not a diss on Bill Gates' kids seem nice, but
yeah,
it's like all this wealth can just sit in these generations who aren't doing anything with it.
Yeah, I mean, and when he was sort of asked why, well, he said a couple of things that were super frustrating, and this is all kind of with the landscape of the Democratic primaries and what Elizabeth Warren is trying to do and what Bernie Sanders is trying to do. Obviously, there are a bunch of billionaires who are spooked and they're speaking out and they're throwing themselves into the race, fucking Bloomberg. and, you know, oh, God, it's so it's infuriating. And Bill Gates also said about Bill, like, when he was asked if they should abolish billionaires, he said, maybe I'm just too biased to think that if you create a company that's super valuable, that at least part of that you should be able to have a little bit for consumption and the balance to do philanthropic things. And
a little bit for consumption. You know, like, you're fine. I'm down with him being super fucking rich. I think he's done great things, but just like there has to be a limit. And the shit he said about Elizabeth Warren is just like, what are you basing that off of? She's always been like down to talk to whoever. She's like part of a thing that she says. She does all these town halls. And she tweeted at him in that vein saying she's happy to talk with whoever.
Also,
it's like, why sass her? And he said that he was going to vote for whoever the more professional candidate was.
Yes!
Which is so weird.
That's
such a weird, this is the one thing. Like, yeah, our president should be professional. But, like, what? And, I mean, Trump's certainly not professional, so obviously he's not going to vote for Trump. But, like, he said, yeah, he'd vote for the most professional and hope that their policies are good.
And I'm sorry, if you're a smart guy with billions of dollars, I maybe would love to hear you say a little bit more about who you're voting for. And, like, the most professional is not... not the right words for the moment that we're in.
It was just kind of weird. I don't know.
He also said regarding like why he doesn't spend his billions in U.S. elections. He says, quote, I choose not to participate in large political donations. There are times it might feel tempting to do so. And there are other people who choose to do so. But I just don't want to grab that gigantic megaphone. Again, like, you're a human being, you're allowed to make your choices, and you've done a lot of great things. The moments that you do choose to use that megaphone, though, then are it's important for you to be very kind of careful about what you're saying and what the implications are. And I think he knows, like, what I'm getting from this is that he's not a fan of Elizabeth Warren. He's not down with being taxed in a higher bracket, really thinks that he legitimately earned every single dollar of the billions that he has. And he is threatened by her.
Yeah. Sounds about right. Hashtag hot takes.
Yeah. So that's sort of an irritation. I mean, especially as we're kind of like, as the impeachment stuff is rolling along and Trump is supposed to like release his taxes, like the court has ordered many times at this point that he really needs to release them and he hasn't. There's so many other things kind of like just kind of going along and we're holding on talking about them until there's like a little bit more to go off of.
But we will sink our little teethy teeths into them.
Yeah, but in the meantime, billionaires need to like it's really worrisome.
No more billionaires, you know,
or just be okay with like be okay with other people being able to have a living wage.
Yeah.
Haven't you ever watched any documentary ever?
Like, jeez Louise.
Come on.
People. Ugh. Gosh.
So,
shall we talk about sex?
Yeah.
Segway.
Yeah, though.
Yeah, sure. We're going to talk about some like millennial sexy things.
And, you know, the whole. The millennial sexy things and the way in which maybe it points to a lot of other things about the moment that we're in for millennials, like the sex that it seems like people are super focused on the sex that millennials are and are not having.
Yeah.
And trying and the things that you can extrapolate from that are actually maybe not what you'd necessarily expect and not what's actually reported a lot.
Yes. Like, there was this thing that, this a study came out, and then there are all these articles about it in Bustle and the New York Times and the Atlantic and the Washington Post about how, like, millennials are having sex less often than any previous generation. And, oh no, poor sex-starved millennials, what's happening? And I remember seeing all those headlines and being like, oh, that's kind of weird, and just, like, moving on with my life. I don't really care about my own.
You didn't want to do, like, a spinoff podcast about just that? You didn't get so enraged?
I did it. I was just like, oh, okay. What else? But that, like, all of those articles, the information they're using, the data they're using is from the General Social Survey, which is this long-term study that ask questions about all kinds of shit, like wealth inequality, religion, and just ask a few questions about sex, like how many sex partners have you had in the last 12 months, and about how often did you have sex during the past 12 months. It doesn't say what sex is in these questions. It doesn't ask about, like, the quality of sex, if you consented to sex. So it is asking about quantity, but not really quality. And then when you look at the National Survey of Sexual Health and Behavior, you'll find that there is, like, a slight decrease in sexual frequency, but there's an increase in the pleasure that people are having. And apparently millennials are 40 times more likely than any other generation to believe that an emotional connection makes sex better.
Pretty so sweet.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, millennials are sexing less, but we're sexing better.
Yeah. I mean, overall, that actually does seem to track. I mean,
it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, like, and Gen Z is also kind of lumped in with some of this data, but when you think about how sort of, with some exceptions with some people, but, like, generally society is getting more progressive, so it kind of makes sense that it would apply to people's sex lives. And then there are some things that are, so, like, 22% of women, like, in the 25 range said that helping pay the tab made them feel less pressure to have sex. But then,
that's crazy.
I know. But then that number gets to almost 50% with boomer women.
Which is wild. I'm just going to keep using adjectives, but
yeah, it's interesting.
The pressure, the fact, like, that you would feel economic, like, you would feel that your sexual activity on a date is dictated by who has the economic power and who owns what.
Yeah, it's a little sketchy. So it's a little sketchy. It's, you know, women, I mean, there's still so many situations in which women are pressured to have sex or have sex or are raped or assaulted. But I do think that it's also in an age now where women are more empowered than in the past to say no. And so I think that's part of the reason maybe why the sex is a little lower in terms of the quantity of it, is because women don't feel like they have to have sex with any guy who buys them a cheesesteak, you know? Like,
yeah. Yeah. And there are so many other ways in which people can have sex. There's, like, more, I think, the greater proliferation of sex toys and stores, mm-hmm, and porn that's available, and, like, different types of relationships, and an openness to, like, other non-penetrative sex, and just kind of the opening up of a dialogue in that, mm-hmm, way, and feeling like, in general, I mean, even the shows that are, mm-hmm, on and available to people, there's an opening up of a language around sexuality and sex. And I think that empowers everyone to be able to even clumsily, yeah, make better choices.
Yeah. There's just more out there.
Yeah.
There's vocabulary now that didn't exist before. Or wasn't used as much, at least, you know?
Yeah.
Public sphere.
I do think it's interesting. And one thing that really bothered me when I was kind of, like, looking into this today was the Economist had a really... There's been some of the articles that seem to be pretty popular over the last couple of years have said that, like, the sex recession... there was this... That was was due in part to female empowerment. This is a tweet from The Economist this year. They said, America is seeing a spike in celibacy fueled by economics, technology, and female empowerment.
Oh, no.
Like, wow.
That's something. That's something to say.
Right. Especially
reputable,
from a reputable place like The Economist. And they got very much sassed by AOC, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, who she retweeted them and said, like, basically, like, WTF. she did it in a much better way. She said, if you think your, quote, celibacy is due to, female empowerment, maybe it's because far too many people relied on the disempowerment plus silence of women to not be celibate in the first place. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. If you do want to kind of like rage, check out Google Economist celibacy or Economist female empowerment bummer. Like, but there's this video with what feels like just stock video images of like men being angry and like a woman in a smart pantsuit, and it's just like
wagging her finger.
Wow. Yeah. She's walking out of a building in the city, and it's just like,
wow.
Less sex.
She has pants on.
It's just, it's a little weird. And again, like they also cited, I think the study, one of the studies that you brought up at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's also based on some pretty silly anecdotal reports of like, yeah, there's sex, like, you know. But I do find it sort of frustrating that there seems to be, again, like this, like, this in the zeitgeist right now, this conversation about like whether or not Me Too has contributed to less sex.
Yeah.
Ooh.
And it's like, and if it has, that's good, because that means the sex that's not happening wasn't really sex. It was more of like an assault or a rape, you know?
Yeah, like so, coercion.
Yeah. So Me thinks, no matter what impact Me Too has, like, it's the outcome doesn't need to be how much sex people are having, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just want people to be, you know, and there's also people who are asexual. There's all kinds of humans out there.
Like, yeah.
Just, you know, love yourself and do whatever sexy things you do or don't want to do. And it doesn't, you know, you don't want to have sex a bunch of times, you don't have to. It's okay. And if you do, go fucking nuts.
Right.
Bang, bang, bang.
Right. It's, and the reasons why people aren't having sex, I think a lot of them, like some of them stem from issues that are good to talk about. And I think maybe if some of these articles are coming from, if we want to give them the benefit of the doubt, they're coming from a place of wanting to crack open a conversation about, you know, body positivity or communication with your partner or anxiety and stress in the workplace.
Yeah.
And in the world that we live in where we're like never able to really tune out or comparison to everyone else's lives on social media and like what hot sex looks like or what you're like, what you know, just the broad comparisons. But I don't know. I think that those are all things that we can have a conversation about without having to tie them to like a non-existent sex recession.
Yeah, it's not a thing, because we talked in a different episode about how millennials have very, very high rates of anxiety and depression compared to other groups and other generations, and having both of those things and the medications for both of those things can negatively impact your sex drive.
Yeah.
It's like that's a little piece. I think there are a lot of pieces to this puzzle.
Right.
It's not one of those like 6-piece toddler puzzles.
Yeah.
It's one for at least a fourth grader.
Could even be a Rubik's Cube, which I think are hard.
You just break it and put it back together. There's a metaphor there somewhere.
Yeah, I know. I was trying to think of how to like tie it without being so dark.
Yeah, and when we were talking about kind of doing this topic, you brought up porn as a thing, which definitely, I feel like I want to preface this too with like, I don't think porn is a bad thing in the world. I think there are good things about it. You can find like, you can learn about, I mean, it can kind of normalize sex in a way. You can kind of explore what you're into. But at the same time, there are some sort of potentially negative things that come along with it, and how, and because really I feel like we're the first generation that grew up with, I mean, you had the AOL dial tone.
Yeah.
So then at the end of that dial tone, you could have porn. Like, that wasn't a thing before, you know, for like the youth to have access to. People who are coming into like their sexual own having access to these just all kinds of naked people doing things.
Yeah. And a lot of the time, obviously, it's like before your brain, before you're old enough to be able to really process what you're seeing, and it like warps your idea of what like real sex is.
It's like, I think every parent should talk to their kid about like, you can watch porn, but like, that's not always what sex really is. And like, you need to make sure your partner is consenting and that you're talking about everything ahead of time. And it's not, because it's like, if you're some kid like growing up and you're into this like really rough shit, and you're like, yeah, this is the other person likes in this video. And then you're like at college or something and you go too far with someone because the lines are blurred in your mind. You know, it's just important to like be aware of what you're consuming, and hopefully it's ethically. It's not like there's some fucked up shit too with like, a lot of porn actresses have been coming forward saying like they've been, you know, abused on set in various ways.
Yeah.
So like there's that. And I think one of the big takeaways I had from looking at some different studies on it was that of the young men who watch porn 6 times or more per week, a third of them say they prefer it over sex with a woman. And those are men who have sex with women in this study. Mm-hmm. Which, like, that's where I feel like it starts to get a little troubling. Like,
yes.
Sort of this trying to fulfill our needs through tech versus
humans
and human connections, and like what potentially negative impacts that can have on our like society as we get more isolated and more reliant on these things.
Yeah.
You know, like the sex dolls are a thing that have gotten more and more popular.
Yeah.
Which like, it's, I don't want to yuck anyone's yum. I just worry about like broader implications as we move towards this more virtual.
Yeah.
No, I sound like a boomer. Okay, boomer myself.
But I mean, it's just a vicious cycle too, because you're probably, and more so now, but you grow up with an exposure to porn and all these different like niche possibilities that you can get off to. And then you feel shame about that, or even if it's not, even if it's just like, but you feel shame and you are only able to be turned on in these specific ways that are not by a real person. And then when you are with a real person, there's a whole lot of shame that impedes your ability to perform. And then you are anxious, depressed, and having issues at a relationship level or something. Like, that's it just is like, it's a full cycle that like begins and ends with alienation. And I think it's definitely worth a lot of time should be spent on this. We have like, there are stats about the amount of depressed adults in the United States, the amount of depressed men. And then when you correlate that with like
porn consumption
and like issues with sex drive or issues with like performance, that like a lot of the time just their own, you know, there's like perceptions. And I think women face a lot of different pressures in sex, but it's like performance is not quite, like, there's just we're just like on different tracks if you're speaking like in a heteronormative way like about this, but there's just different, like, there are different pressures in that situation, and so it's just a different gauge of what
it's a different thing. And it's like, and they like specifically talk about how like when it's, and these studies are almost all about men, which is like, I'd be curious to see how women are impacted by porn when they're watching in their, you know, early teens.
Yeah.
Because I think in some ways it can be empowering for women, because we're sort of denied our sexuality in a lot of ways growing up, you know, and men, boys are kind of encouraged to go for it. So I think sometimes it's a sign that, like, a woman's, like, comfortable exploring sexually, or a girl, but I'm sure there's negative shit for the ladies, too.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a study of, like, 20,000 men who started watching porn in their early teens, and they found that, like, by their mid-20s, as compared to men who didn't watch a bunch of porn in their early teens, some of these men, like, a significant portion of these men, they found that sex itself became less enjoyable, and they found masturbation to be, like, a really compulsive act, and that the types of porn that they looked at became more and more hardcore over time. It's like they almost built up this immunity to, like, sexual images,
mm-hmm.
whereas they, you know, they can't get off unless they're watching something, like, super intense on Pornhub, not when they're, like, with a partner.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, which also just connects back to that whole idea of, like, humans connecting. Like,
yeah.
Nothing wrong with jerking off. Nothing wrong with, you know, having a sexual relationship with yourself and watching porn that's hopefully ethically sourced.
Yeah.
But when that becomes the preference consistently over interacting with someone else, and that is broad, that's, like, a broad societal thing and not just, like, oh, some individuals feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
Gets a little spooky.
It does, and it also, like, and then it just, this also bleeds over into, like, dating, and I think, like, there's been this is a completely anecdotal and based mm-hmm. on absolutely zero studies, but it feels very mm-hmm. feelsies to me. Like, there has been a real bell curve in terms of, like, there was, like, a peak where people realized mm-hmm. about Tinder and all these different apps and how, like, exciting it was to have mm-hmm. all these different people potentially at your fingertips and all these options.
Yeah. Fingertips.
But how that novelty wears off. And I think, like, mm-hmm. as a group, it's sort of, it's worn off. I mean,
yeah.
people want, there's always going to be the people that are looking for hookups, but there's, I think what most humans are always looking for is connection. Mm-hmm. And that's why we're drawn to, you know, the stories that we're drawn to. And that's why a lot of people are on apps and mm-hmm. like, because you're in search of something.
Yeah.
And with all these apps and with all the different ways that you can connect, we're learning gradually ways to narrow the field, to be a little bit more specific about our wants and needs and mm-hmm. what we're looking for. And, you know, just on the whole, we're all trying to be a little bit more discerning of, like, how to navigate our time and our emotional health on these apps. And sometimes that leads to no dates for a while because mm-hmm. it's alienating. You're like, not any of this.
A lot of people trying to just smush. Or what was that from Jersey Shore? What do they call it? Was it smushing? Smushroom?
Smushing, maybe?
I think it was smushing.
Was it?
Right?
Yeah.
Smushing. All right,
a smushroom?
Most importantly.
Oh, my God. Ugh. That was always crazy.
What a show.
What a show.
Now they're all, like, for the most part, they're all, like, grown, you know? Like,
yeah. Well, isn't one of them in jail?
I think the situation.
Oh.
Which, like, fuck that guy. He was the worst.
Ew. They were all bad, but yeah, ugh.
Yeah. Not a fine wine, that one. He's still bad. Maybe worse. Anyway. Jersey Shore aside.
And there are so many interesting documentaries on the complexities of porn itself and of, mm-hmm. I also agree, like, mm-hmm. if it's ethically sourced, which is another entire issue that it's, like, a lot of exploitative shit
mm-hmm.
all over the place, and how do you really know what you're getting is, like, on a level,
yeah.
And that these, like, there's been no coercion, and you're not taking advantage of, like, young, like, mm-hmm. women who are just turned 18, and you've flown them out to Miami,
yeah, maybe a model, and then slowly, you know,
like, put them in this, like,
alcohol or drugs or, yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of things that can
be, like, low-level prostitution issues. But, oh, and there's this, there's another, like, a lot of these articles also invoke sort of the specter of, like, well, we don't want what happens, what's happening in Japan to happen here.
Yeah, I saw that a lot.
It's like, you know, I get that. I would say, can we cross that bridge, like, when it becomes a crisis? I don't know what we're... It, of course, it's worth looking at and seeing kind of like what's happening over there and how did they get to a culture where they're or get to a point where there's like that word hikikomori or something where it's like celibate adults like living with their parents into their 40s and being so socially isolated and incapable of real meaningful social interaction. Yeah. That's certainly bad. I think something like they said there's like 500,000 people who identify in Japan as hikikomori. It's like, ooh, that's definitely a problem.
Yeah.
But I don't think we're there. I don't think we're close to being there. Mm-hmm. And perhaps like kind of having these like fluff pieces that keep fueling this is like not helpful.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And you know what, we're also, this is just a random thing that I wanted to throw out there while we're talking about it. Millennials are kinkier too. We're using kinkier sexual accessories and doing quote kinkier things, which also I think indicates like just a growing sexual openness, like people being more comfortable with themselves and their sexuality, and that's a good thing too.
That is a good thing, and hopefully being kinkier, being able to communicate better with each other will also generate into more lines of communication open when we all have kids and are trying to navigate, like, helping them with their sex lives and, you know, what's going on in their world. So, you know.
Do what you want, whether it's, you know, vanilla missionary every time or whether you just want to, like, anal bead forever, whatever. Anal bead forever, whatever. Not my personal cup of tea, but, like, live it. Nothing wrong with it. No. Anal beads. I don't know why I'm going to keep talking about them.
Yeah.
They're little circular balls. There's a whole string of them, and you put them in your butt or someone else's butt. And then...
That personally makes my butt just like go whoop, like close
she
up.
She just did a wide open move. No, she did close up.
I did a close, but
well, I guess I'll have to rethink your Christmas present. We got you an assortment of anal beads for her. They're all pink and they're $30 more.
Yeah. I'm just coming from the person that got me Astor Piece Classics, I believe, 1 year.
Oh, how could I have forgotten?
I know.
Yeah, I got you a vibrator, didn't I?
You did.
Yeah.
In college.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I like Masterpiece Classics a lot, so to receive a DVD that was Masterpiece.
Like an ass. You're a good friend.
Oh, good times.
Good times.
Oh my gosh. Let's see. What else?
Yeah, was there anything else you wanted to say about, like, sex? I like sex.
Yeah, it's pretty great. Especially when you're, you know, like, with someone that you're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's pretty incredibly bad when you're not able to find the language to communicate what you want or what you need. Mm-hmm. And when you've let yourself somehow be in a situation that you're not comfortable with. So, like, sex can be great, but also it can be really bad and really only perpetuate a culture of shame and anxiety and a hesitancy to discuss anything about it. Mm-hmm. There are two ways to go on this. And I think just to continue to sort of debunk myths, like the myth that, like, millennials, not that this is, like, necessarily the most destructive myth in the world, but it's just sort of something
that really caught, like, it really gained traction.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny because I think sometimes we've done topics, and this one I noticed a fair amount, but it's like one small study comes out.
Yeah.
And it's
people
just
run with it.
People run with it, but the same things are caught in every article. So you feel like, you know, there's just when you see these headlines, it's so easy to sort of jump on the bandwagon and be like, yeah,
sure. It said this, and this other place said it, and it's like reputable places. So it's like fair if you don't have time to fact check every fucking thing you read.
Yeah,
like more of a fluff piece. You don't fact check, and then everyone reports it, and you think it's true, and it's not. So I think it's just a nice little reminder to like, if you can, check the sources, check the studies, just see like, oh, where did this study come from? What was this study actually about? And then if you did that, you'd see like, oh, this wasn't really a sex study and it didn't.
And there weren't that many people in it, or it was kind of focusing on something else. And
cool. Guys.
We wanted to plug a, like on this topic and kind of as like an organization to support and to look into and to tell people about. It is the site ohmygodyes.com, and it basically has shows a lot of different sex techniques and female pleasure techniques, and just is a really cool database of answers to how to make sex more rewarding for women. Fun fact, when I started dating my boyfriend, current boyfriend, he already had a subscription to this. So, you know, it's
I didn't know that.
I don't know if I told you that, but yeah, because I brought it up and he was like, oh, I actually, you know, I got this and I was really hoping to like be able to use it with a partner. And it was like, oh, cool.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
I might take that home. I mean,
yeah. Because everyone should be interested in sort of, not necessarily like how to do everything better, but how to, like, I certainly found it helpful because for me, like, just as like a complete mystery, like what is most arousing to me and what like is what does it for me is it's like still hard for me to articulate, but like this site, Oh My God Yes, which is championed also by Emma Watson, Miss Hermione Granger, and a lot of other wonderful women, it's really helpful to me. It's been helpful in being like, oh yeah, that's totally,
yeah,
that's a thing that helps. And thanks for the language.
Yeah, no, it's an awesome tool, and just like to note, it's for pleasure for people who have vaginas. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah,
throw that out there
for vaginas, but also for all ages. Like they say, it's like everyone, you know, of age like whatever, 18 to 99 or something. All ages and so Oh My God Yes, check it out. It's a good thing. It's not our good thing for today, but it is a good thing and a worthy place to spend time and money. Hashtag not sponsored.
We'll take your money though.
Yeah.
Well,
and now for We See You.
Boop, 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 boop. But not a celebratory noise. I don't know why I do that. All right, T.I., in case you were wondering, where's he been?
I wasn't, turns out, but...
You didn't wake up every morning?
I was wondering what was happening.
Where's
with T.I.?
Oh, you're focused on T.Pain.
I was, but sorry, continue.
I do wonder. I did think about T.Pain recently. Anyway, T.I. recently told a podcast, shout out. It wasn't ours. That he goes to the gynecologist every year to have the doctor, quote unquote, check his daughter's hymen to make sure she's still a virgin. She's currently 18 years old, and he has been doing this every year, the day after her birthday, since she was around puberty age. Like, happy birthday. Go to the doctor with your dad to get your hymen checked. And so, first of all, like, having a torn hymen doesn't mean you have had vaginal sex, and having an intact hymen doesn't mean that you haven't. Women have different anatomies when it comes to their hymens, and some women tear them while engaging in activities like sports. And even if this hymen check were an accurate measure of vaginal virginity, it's extremely fucked up to take ownership of your daughter's body in that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's an adult now, and also I can't imagine how damaging it was to have, like, your annual purity checks as a teenager.
Ew.
No, plus the double standards. His sons are not held to the standard of avoiding premarital sex. And I did enjoy that, because I was worried, like, gosh, this, like, young woman brainwashed and, like, but a little silver lining is that she has been liking comments criticizing her dad's actions. She even unfollowed him on Instagram.
Yes.
Like, fuck you for talking about my hymen on a podcast.
Yeah.
And also a little call out to the doctor who asked her permission to share the results with her father while he was in the room.
Ugh, yeah.
Which is, like, not what? How you do that. At all.
No.
So we see you to T.I. and any father who feels like he can control his daughter's body and sexuality.
Yeah.
That's hers.
We see you. And also, like, come on. I mean, T.I. is the one who had, like, the song about, like, late night sex, gas up the jet. You can have whatever you like. Like, this is you can have whatever you like.
Let me pull up the lyrics.
Like.
Yeah. Yeah, not.
Late night sex. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, it goes, you know, the old sugar daddies, they be tricking, they tell them, girls, you can have whatever you like.
Yeah.
Late night sex, so wet, so tight. I gas up the jet
for you tonight, and baby, you can go wherever you like.
How did this turn into?
Us singing T.I.
Yeah.
I don't know. Some things are just kind of burned into my brain.
I want your body, need your body, you know. Etc.
When you're with me, you don't need nobody.
Like,
right?
Unless you, yeah.
Confirm.
Yeah.
Fact check.
So, like, honestly, unless he wrote this about his wife.
Right.
Then, like, I don't know, T.I. No matter how many stacks you have on your deck or how much Patron is on ice, if this isn't about your wife,
then you're a rotten hypocrite.
Rotten. You're a rotten hypocrite, T.I. How dare you give us these jams to grind to and take them away. All right. What's upsetting you?
Great. So for me, I'm going to see Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix. So Reed Hastings defended his company's decision to take down an episode of comedian Hasan Minhaj's show Patriot Act after Saudi Arabia asked him to, basically, saying that the company Netflix is not in the truth to power business. So Netflix caved to pressure from the Saudi royal family. They removed this episode because it was critical of the crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman. And this was all just because the royal family sent a letter requesting its removal. The full quote from Reed Hastings is, quote, "We're not in the news business. We're not trying to do truth to power. We're trying to entertain, and we can pick fights with governments about newsy topics, or we can say, because the Saudi government lets us have shows like Sex Education that show a very liberal lifestyle and show very provocative and important topics, we can accomplish a lot more by being entertainment and by influencing a global conversation about how people live rather than try to be another news channel." And the Netflix spokesperson followed Reed's statement by saying that they took it down because of a valid legal request in Saudi Arabia. So this is disturbing for a number of reasons. Netflix is a global company worth about $10 billion as of 2018. And Reed Hastings has a net worth of about $4 billion. And they could absolutely afford to take on censorship in Saudi Arabia. They could publicize the Saudis' letter. They could force Mohammed bin Salman to actually resort to state censorship of the platform, and then that would sort of cause, like, global pressure on Saudi Arabia to allow it. Mohammed bin Salman, you'll remember, you know, he's still claiming he's a liberal leader and a reformist, but he is the leader that ordered Jamal Khashoggi, the Washington Post journalist and citizen of the U.S., Jamal Khashoggi's murder last year. the U.S., led by Trump and Kushner, have business ties there and have not really condemned the country or these actions. We haven't stopped business with them. And we need to remember the details of this, since our government and the businesses that we rely on, like, you know, we use Netflix every day, basically, choose not to. One of the more depressing things is that I feel like we're living in the kind of dystopian hellscape that Netflix would actually create and produce, except in, you know, the story meant to shock and entertain, there would be heroes standing up to the billionaire class with only dollar bills in their eyes. As more billionaires are emboldened to step into the Democratic primaries with only their business interests at heart, we should really ask ourselves where the brave people are and how can we help them. Reed Hastings, we see you.
Yes, we do. All right. Khalil Wheeler Weaver is accused of murdering four women, chosen because they were black sex workers who were experiencing homelessness, mental health issues, or both. Two women, Joanne Brown and Robin West, were both seen with him just before they went missing and were later found dead. Police interviewed but did not hold Wheeler Weaver in September. They had described him as calm and helpful. He came up with some story about how he took one out on a date for her birthday and then didn't see her. But he was documented as being seen with both of these women. Anyway, so 1 month later, another woman called the police to report that Wheeler Weaver had handcuffed her, duct taped her mouth shut, raped her in the back of his car, and almost strangled her to death.
Oh my God.
She says that the police who took her statement were more interested in figuring out whether or not she was a sex worker than they were in investigating the violent attack that she endured. A New Jersey police officer confirmed that he originally did not believe her account because she waited an hour to report the attack. So, like, what the fuck with that? But moving on. 1 week after this attack was reported, so 1 week after this woman calls the police, an hour after her attack, and describes what happened and who did it, and this is a man that they had already interviewed in connection with two women who had died.
Oh, my God.
So a week after this, Wheeler Weaver allegedly met with a allegedly met with a college student named Sarah Butler after she agreed to have sex with him for $500. Her body was later found in a nature preserve. She had been strangled to death. So Sarah Butler's friends and family, they launched their own investigation and tracked down Wheeler Weaver based on his messages to her on an app called Tagged. And a quote from the article is, Butler's friends and family created a fake profile on the site using the promise of sex to lure Wheeler Weaver into an in-person meetup. When he arrived, prosecutors say he found himself face-to-face with the police. So this family of this woman who died and was murdered had to set up this sting operation, essentially. Like, the police didn't even do that. If the police officer had taken these women seriously, he would not have been able to continue to rape and murder vulnerable people. The fact that in the end it was the victim's family who did the work to capture the perpetrator is absolutely ridiculous. Black lives matter, and we need police officers to care when black women die, and we need them to be believed when they come forward. Sex workers also deserve to be able to earn the living that they're making without being murdered. And the men who prey on vulnerable women need to be held accountable. We see you to the police involved in this case.
Oh, we see you.
So awful.
That's awful. That's really... That's... Sometimes we just have a we see you where I just have to, like...
Just a meh.
I want to take a shower and then continue. My next we see you is actually, I found it as I was doing some reading on Reed Hastings and the whole we see you from 2 seconds ago. This we see you is for the CEO of Uber, Dara Khosrowshahi. I separated these two, even though they do share the commonality of both being mealy-mouthed, cowardly CEOs beholden to Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. Inexplicably, the CEO of Uber allowed himself to be interviewed by Axios and let slip a really dark idea. Similar to Reed Hastings, he said the quiet part out loud. Oopsies. When asked why Uber wasn't going to a major conference in Saudi Arabia this year, the CEO blamed it on a board meeting schedule. When the Axios reporter pressed him if that was, you know, if they really wanted to go, couldn't they have rescheduled the board meeting? The CEO was kind of like, oh, we never reschedule board meetings. They're planned years in advance. So then they moved on to the question of why, since it has been confirmed again that Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, personally ordered the murder of the American journalist Jamal Khashoggi. You know, why Uber would allow Saudi Arabia's sovereign wealth fund to be the fifth largest shareholder in Uber and allow the head of that fund, Yasir bin Otman Al Rumayyan, to be on the board of the company, the CEO's answer was downright pathetic. He said, quote, they made a serious mistake. They being like Saudi Arabia and Mohammed bin Salman in terms of like murdering a journalist at a consulate. So it's a serious mistake, he said. We've made mistakes too with self-driving cars. We stopped driving and we're recovering from that mistake. I think that people make mistakes. It doesn't mean that they can never be forgiven. So Axios then pressed, saying what all humans with beating hearts were thinking, which is basically self-driving cars are an issue with technology. You didn't personally order someone to be murdered. I'm paraphrasing. And the Uber CEO, basically his response was a shrug emoji. He talked of the CIA confirmation of Mohammed bin Salman's role, and he said, well, I didn't read that part of the CIA report. And then he said, I think from a Saudi perspective, they're just like any other shareholder, right? Now we're a public company, and anyone can invest in our company if they choose to do so. That felt incredibly pathetic. Really kind of chilling. It felt like this was some combination of succession characters like Roman Roy after the Japanese rocket exploded, or Logan Roy when he said the phrase, no real person involved. This just feels like some really heartless corporate bullshit where the CEO actually accidentally said exactly what their priorities are. And the intentional murdering of a journalist should not be forgotten. There has still not been repercussions in any real way for Saudi Arabia for this. They've basically gotten off scot-free, and we can absolutely trace this back to Trump and Kushner having strong business ties in that area. This is just a reminder, we're not just fighting Trump and his overt racism, sexism, and amorality all the time. We're fighting billionaires that, kind of like the character Littlefinger in Game of Thrones, benefit from the chaos that is wrought by Trump and by his people, and by the amorality that they then inspire in other people in the administration and in businesses globally. So to the CEO of Uber, we see you. And I wish I had something more optimistic to say. It's really scary because it's like I use Uber every day. I use Netflix pretty much every day.
Yeah.
I do not want to have to get rid of these. And what would that really do? But we see you.
Yeah. Alrighty. In Bellingham, Washington, a woman named Allison, who was 3 months pregnant, went to the hospital because she was bleeding. She had passed a blood clot described as the size of a jawbreaker and had a fever of 100.4 degrees Fahrenheit. The hospital she went to was a Peace Health St. Joseph Medical Center, which is a Catholic hospital in Bellingham. She was sent home 3 times, and eventually on her 4th admission, a doctor told her that her pregnancy was life-threatening, but the hospital had avoided telling her abortion was an option due to religious restrictions. Again, it's a Catholic hospital. And even after letting her know, the doctor could not go forward with performing the abortion until the hospital ethics committee approved it. They ban abortion unless, quote, its direct purpose is the cure of a proportionately serious pathological condition of a pregnant woman, and it cannot be safely postponed until the unborn child is viable. So in other words, the hospital would allow the life-saving surgery only if the committee considered her sick enough. And in situations like these, patients can deteriorate rapidly, and there is no sign of her condition doing anything but worsening. And waiting longer for the care puts the patient in more jeopardy. They ended up approving the procedure, but had they not, she was going to be sent 90 miles away to Seattle because Peace Health St. Joseph Medical Center is the only hospital in Bellingham. We see you to those who feel empowered to infringe on women's reproductive freedom because of your religious beliefs instead of trusting her to make decisions after consulting with competent medical professionals. And we see you to everyone who knew her pregnancy was life-threatening and declined to tell her that there was a life-saving procedure available.
That is so fucked up. We see you. That's really...
In our own backyard.
I know. Oh, my God. And I... The idea of, like, the ethics, like... An ethics committee, basically, mm-hmm. like making these types of decisions, or if there's going to be an ethics mm-hmm. committee, they should be focused on patient health, and that should not be
crazy talk.
Like, yeah,
crazy.
That should not be like influenced by religion, but I guess because like the world we live in, so many people, it's mm-hmm. who you believe is like. Gonna greet you when you die should not be influencing
yeah.
women about to give birth. Fuck that.
Indeedy.
Oh, we see you. Okay, my final we see you. It was kind of a tie, but I'm gonna go with Stephen Miller is extremely racist, and we already knew that. But news from today, there are a lot of leaked emails from the lead up to the 2016 election, and they show that Stephen Miller promoted white nationalist literature. He pushed racist immigration stories, was super pissed about the Confederate symbols that were removed after Dylann Roof murdered a bunch of people in a church. And he backed immigration policies that Hitler once praised in Mein Kampf. He was using InfoWars links to help with extremist reporting. He was in touch with anti-Muslim extremists who have what seemed to be ties to the KKK. I mean, white nationalist ties, but probably even further than that. And he's just all around sort of a follower of white nationalist figures and is tied to them in different ways. And also posts conspiracy theories about immigration. So a lot of heinous stuff that the Southern Poverty Law Center put forth today. And hopefully there'll be more analysis in the coming days. This is probably not even going to make major headlines because there's a lot of other shit going on. But Stephen Miller has been the backbone, has sort of been responsible in a lot of ways for the worst parts of Trump's different anti-immigration policies, from trying to cut off immigration completely from 5 different countries for no reason, to personally following up with like mid-level immigration officers to make sure that just specific people on his own list of illegal immigrants in this country are deported. He is an evil, spiteful little gremlin, and it's just really scary to see kind of the depths to which he sunk in the lead up to the election, and the fact that he's one of the longest lasting people since like before the campaign or the campaign all the way through. He's still currently at the White House. Any self-respecting person, if this information was released, he would be promptly fired. He probably wouldn't even be anywhere near the White House to begin with. But this is a case of someone who, depressingly, I think, is not going to suffer any actual repercussions for any of this new reporting. So we've known that we have white nationalists in the White House, but Stephen Miller there's a paper trail to this, and the damage that he has already wrought and the lives that are lost because he's ensured that people have been sent back to countries where they were not safe is already extraordinary. And to add to it, now we have a pile of evidence that he of the depths to which his ignorant hate actually extends. So, Stephen Miller, we see you.
We sure do. And on that note, we're going to end with a good thing.
Yeah.
You had pointed this out to me that the iPhone and the new update has gender-neutral emojis available.
Hooray!
I know people might just be like, they're just emojis, whatever. But, I mean, when you think about how much people communicate with emojis.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
how people communicate nowadays, as we're kind of talking about.
Yeah.
And the fact that just like representation matters, you know, in all areas and, you know, providing an image people can relate to and normalizing and showing everyone like, hey, there's lots of types of people in this world and we should all be represented.
Yes.
So that's nice.
It's really nice. Mm-hmm. It's really nice.
Hey, what's your most recently used? Give me five of your most recently used. I just thought of this.
This is fun. Let's see.
I've got, turkey and knife, because that's how I've communicated about Thanksgiving. Even though I don't eat turkey and it's a fucked up holiday. I've got raccoon, because I do raccoons a lot. I got cheese and I got a peach. You know why?
Wow. Well, since I've been hanging out with a lot of family and friends this weekend, it's a pretty, I would say, relatively standard. There's like a variety of different hearts. There's the yummy, like tongue out. There's the poop emoji. Cake because of birthdays, party hat, wine, dancing girl, the cheers.
Yeah.
It's a pretty
fun.
It's a pretty fun and frolicky group.
Ooh, she's breezy. All right, y'all. What are your most frequently used emojis? Let us know.